If I could call this 1,390th meeting of the Board of Directors to order, I would ask for a motion to approve the agenda. Motion made and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I would ask for a certification of the board executive session. Mr. Downey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the board certify.
There you go.
To the best of each member's knowledge and with no individual member dissenting, that at the just concluded board executive session, only such matters as are authorized for discussion in executive session under board bylaws article 10, and only those matters identified in the notice by which the executive session was convened were heard, discussed, or considered by the board. So moved.
Moved. Do I hear a second? Motion made and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I would ask for approval of the minutes of the meeting of October the 24th, 2003. Motion made. Do I hear a second? Second? Okay. Motion made and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
We have a period of public comment. I would remind the speakers that we have a 2-minute time limit for presentations in order to be able to both hear everybody and for the board to conclude its business today. First, I have Sarah Green. Good morning.
My name is Sarah Green, and I have spoken to you before about the Tacoma Metro Station development. I am the Advisory Neighborhood Commissioner for Single Member District 4B01, and the Tacoma Metro Station is within. The design that we have seen, the latest design, and to make some community-friendly changes before there is any vote at all on this. And I would like to ask you to look at the apartment building that is directly next to the, on Eastern Avenue, and to all of the homes, and including a cooperative building, all the way up Eastern Avenue, and the scale of those buildings, which is really three stories. What is being proposed are buildings, is a building for the metro station that would be about 70 plus feet tall. It is not within the scale of our community. And it's concerning. And it's concerning to people who live on Eastern Avenue to see something like that. Just in walking up here, I'm looking across at one of the courthouse buildings. It's to your right as you walk out of the front door of this building. And eyeballing it, somebody with me said he thought that building, even with its decorative green roof, was probably around 70-something feet tall. This is an office area. So we'd like to ask you to make this a building that is an asset in our community. We think that it can be an asset. We're not telling you not to build. We're asking that before you take any vote, that you not propose something, even for public hearing, that is out of scale with our community. And again, thank you for your attention. I thank you for the time you're spending on this project. Good morning. Thanks again.
Thank you. Next, we have Seth Grimes.
Morning.
Good morning.
I'm a Grimes member of the Tacoma Park Council. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. I was here at the last meeting last month and addressed you. Subsequently, the Tacoma Park City Council did pass a resolution on Tacoma Metro development on October 28th. You should have received that. It was also transmitted to the Montgomery County Executive and Montgomery County Council, Director of the Department of Transportation. The city officially, the policy does call on WMATA and developer DYA to modify the design associated with the metro station that would be incorporated into the amended joint development agreement to fully address concerns addressed about safety, loading dock position in particular, transit accessibility for persons with disabilities, neighborhood compatibility, as Ms. Green has mentioned, massing and step back from Eastern Avenue, building height within the current zoning. The proposed building height is far outside the zoning that's right now, and any speculation about a Washington, D.C. planned unit development process is only speculation at this point, and traffic impact and so on. I understand that the design that we were provided by developer UIA on November 4th mislabels the position of the ADA and elderly persons drop off. We have not been provided with a revised design, nor with a design that addresses the loading dock positioning, which would entail trucks backing across a sidewalk on Eastern Avenue Northwest. It is important for you as the WMATA board to insist on a correct, workable, safe, accessible design prior to voting a Tacoma amended joint development agreement, in particular noting that WMATA does wish to move forward with EYA despite an expired joint development agreement without recompeting the project. Normally, a recompete would surface the best financial terms and the best design. We are confident that EYA can come forward with great financial terms for WMATA, design that will promote transit usage that will meet community concerns regarding safety, transit accessibility, traffic impact, community compatibility. We ask you to insist on such a design from developer EYA prior to enacting a Tacoma amended joint development agreement. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Jim DeLucy.
Good morning. My name is Jim DeLucy. I'm an accessibility consultant. I'm an architect. Testified before the Senate Judiciary on ADA matters when the ADA was being contemplated. What is being proposed here is not a visible building at present. Even our city council, former city council members, has rated it perhaps a sixth place finish in the design competition. Accessibility of this building is drastically compromised. Contrary to what one of the WMATA officials said at the last meeting, it is so. It is compromised. Currently, people with disabilities can exit their vehicles, get onto a protected sidewalk, and cross a safe zone marked pathway to the metro. This proposed design has accessible parking buried in the middle of a parking garage. People get out of their cars. They can only exit by means of traveling through a traffic lane. This is totally unacceptable under current ADA regulations. Elevator in the building. There are three separate elevators. They're separate from one another. The main elevator is the front of the building. Serves all of the floors. It is the only elevator that serves all of the floors. Unfortunately, it also serves the loading dock. So if someone was to want to use that elevator who was disabled, came in the front of the building, was tied up, they would have to exit the building, go through a separate entrance to the building, or go through the parking garage in order to in order to have access to their floor. Parking, as I said, parking is in the traffic lane. Lack of daylight in the corridor. There's so many units packed into this building that none of the corridors have daylight. A person with visual impairments who has some sight of vision cannot find their way through this building or recognize where they might be. These problems are solvable, and they're not that difficult to solve if the developer would come to the table, meet with us, talk about revamping the design. Unfortunately, I believe the developer is set in their ways, has no intention of changing the design, has no intention of trying to make building this more accessible to people. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Megan Schreibner. Okay. Faith Wheeler.
Hello, Faith Wheeler. Steps basically from the metro to the metro station. I'd like to draw your attention to the Code of Buildings Act, which happens to be in the right now. I testified at it.
above the sidewalk, the width of the street, avenue, or highway in its front increased by 20 feet at the relevant part. And just before that, section 1 of the original of the 1910 Hyde Act would still stand today. No combustible or non-fireproof building in the Columbia used, occupied, or intended to use, or occupied as a dwelling, flat, apartment house, tenement, lodging or boarding house, hospital dormitory, or any similar purpose shall be erected, altered, or raised to a height of more than 4 stories, or more than 50 feet in height above the sidewalk. I realize this is the building part and not specifically the transportation part, not a part. I would also like to quickly call your attention to zoning of the District of Columbia for R5A, which is part of this property. A maximum height is 40 feet. Zoning regulations, limitations for C2A, which is also part of this property, maximum height is 50 feet. I understand that looking at a possibility, I think it's down now to 6 stories, something like up to 70 feet in height, which is very odd to me. I don't understand why this, the Columbia regulation is not respected. And I'm not. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Commissioner Marling.
Good morning. My name is Commissioner Robin Hammond Marling. I'm Vice Chair for ANC 7D and Board 7. My testimony today is to request that this board postpone action on the portions of the public hearing docket B1302. that are specific to the District of Columbia bus route changes to 30 lines east of the Anacostia River. I ask for this postponement for the following reasons. Number one, there has been no follow-up nor communication with me nor with my constituents since the October 7th community meeting that was organized by the Office of the Mayor of Constituent Services. I learned last night at 7:56 p.m. that there are now new changes to these proposals, as indicated by the maps dated 11/13/2013, and the language is very confusing. For the record, all communication I've had been able to have regarding these proposals has been prompted by Councilmember Bowser's office staff, which has been excellent in helping me communicate with WMATA. WMATA has not reached out to me, 7D Commission, nor to my constituents concerning these proposals. At the October 7th meeting, Mr. Hamry made verbal promises to an audience of 42 constituents that there would be no changes to the 30 lines. That proposal would not be acted on, he stated. We do have an audio of that meeting. The resolution now before you is inaccurate in stating that the service equity analysis in this report is not disparate, nor does it not have disproportionate impacts on minorities. 6 of the 13 proposals for the bus realignment in the District of Columbia occurring east of the river, neighborhoods whose populations are heaviest Black and other minorities. Of the 6 public hearing locations, 2, of the 6 locations where the public hearings were held, 2 were held west of the river in wards 2 and 4. Both wards not having an impact on these proposals. And finally, I conclude by saying we collected over 100 plus signatures, which amounted to 40 plus petitions. And I'd like to ask you, did you not weigh these petitions? Did you not see them, review them? Do they not matter or factor into moving this resolution forward? My constituents need further time to review the new changes being proposed. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That completes the testimony from individuals who have signed up. The next is the report by the Accessibility Advisory Committee, Mr. Sheehan.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to, I guess. Thanks for letting me report to you today. I think we've had a very good month last month based on the work done by my subcommittee, working groups, and individuals on my committee. A couple of things that I thought were noteworthy to remark on, particularly in the area of the fare calculator that we've now had working for about 3 or 4 months. Seen a decrease in the highest fare for Metro Access users from 30% to 25%. We've also seen that the minimum fare, about 40% of the people had for using the minimum were able to pay the minimum fare initially, and we saw that go up to about 47%.
We think that this is a dramatic improvement. We appreciate the way the fare calculator is working, and we think that it's doing the job that we expected it to do. So thank you for your support on that, and also for the office for being able to track us. I love this mic.
So do we.
Yeah. We also have been involved with getting reports from Bethesda on station future. We understand there is going to be an awful lot of video kiosks out there, signage out there. We are tracking that. We're involved in different aspects of that state. We are pleased that they have been getting regular reports on the improvements that state is going to have. Thanks very much for keeping us informed on what the plan is going to plan to state. With the individuals involved and be able to give our expertise. I think one of the major issues that the board has actually directed us to be involved with and something that started on putting together bus stop accessibility working group. We understand that accessibility to bus stop is a big project, something that we have talked about in the past, put together a working group. We're drafting some cases right now to be able to move forward with me, the board. We're also in touch with council of government so we can coordinate activities with them. What we're planning on doing is taking what the information that we have, extending the work that we're doing out to the jurisdiction. To the individuals within the jurisdiction, their accessibility governance boards that can assist us make sure that we can start to make improvements with the bus stop. We've been working on this, getting information for a couple of years. I think that we're in FY14 now. Then FY14, we'll be able to start to track some of the changes, some of the improvement. I look forward to coming back and reporting you on the improvements that we're getting in the bus stop. Working with jurisdictions, sort of want to create a win-win situation so that jurisdictions can take credit. Certainly, I think Wabata can take credit, and people with disabilities will be able to bus stop. Those are kind of the highlights that I have for this month. We appreciate the one more area that we did talk about, discussed it with you, is in the area of fair media and certain proposals that we, as a committee, are looking at in FY14. If there will be a fair increase, we have a series of proposals that we're talking through, and we can wait to see what fair structure will be next month. We appreciate being engaged in conversations. Carol Kissel announcement. Everyone comes for my.
Any questions or comments from Mr. Sheehan? Mr. Bolger? It's all the way at the bottom.
All right. Could you comment on the lighting project that you've been working on? The station lighting.
We have, we continue to put, we have a work group. We continue to work with that work group, and they're making very good progress. That is an activity that is ongoing with our committee. I think that it's fair to say that the work that the information that we've gotten through the disability community, through the low vision community, disabled veterans and those groups have been great. I think I said in the past that we were able to provide that information back to the board through a lot of cooperation with the Office of Access Services, which we appreciate. At the same time, I think that the board has made that a priority. And so I think bottom line for me is what we see here is moving forward in a way
on a project that we've been trying to do for about.
A lot of credit, I think, goes to the disability community. My group has done some good work, and I appreciate your work that you've done.
Any other comments? hearing none, thank you, Mr. Sheehan.
Thank you very much.
Next, we have the report by the Writers Advisory Council, Ms. Hermanson.
I'm going to take off the mic. How's that? Better?
Better. Thank you.
For those of you who only see me once in a while, I'm Barbara Hermanson. I'm the Vice President of Life Care for Virginia. There is the monthly letter from Ben Ball, our chairman. Not working. I'll just. How about this? Oh, wow. I can tell. Okay. So you already have in the packet the monthly letter from Van Ball. And so I only want to bring your attention to one thing. And it covers the various topics we had in our November meeting. But the one I'd like to talk about is that we're having our second listening session. We have a session in Maryland next Monday in Largo at the Largo Kettering Public Library. And I open this to all of you who are passionate about Maryland writers, and would like to hear what we will hear from them. This is one avenue that we have of hearing from our writers, and we welcome anyone else who'd like to participate. The next topic I wanted to just talk about briefly is we had a meeting earlier today with the board's executive committee and our leadership team, and it's a forum we really value, having the ear of the board all to ourselves once every quarter, and it was a very, I think, productive session. We talked a lot about issues of interest to both of us, and we thank you for that. I also want to thank you for this forum that we have every month. We appreciate being able to get in front of all of you and talk about what we've been doing, as well as having the staff come to our monthly sessions. We had a lot of presentations this month. We found out a lot about what's going on and what's coming up, and we appreciate those things. So that's it for my report. Any questions?
Any questions or comments? Hearing none. Thank you very much. We appreciate
your
work. Before I make some chair's remarks, I would recognize a guest that we have here today to present Metro with a special recognition as a military-friendly employer. This designation has been made by Victory Media, publisher of GI Jobs magazine, and William Offit, from Victory Media is here today to present us with the award. Mr. Offutt, would you please come to the podium?
Thank you, Chairman.
We're having a little audio problem today, so.
It happens. thank you for inviting Victory Media to share this moment with you, recognizing Washington Metro as a military-friendly employer. If I might digress just a moment, I was considering myself, using a Navy term, one of the original plank holders of the Red Line in Metro back in the 70s. That is, I walked and drove across a lot of planks back in those days when I was living and working on Connecticut Avenue. But now I live in Loudoun County, and so I consider myself one of the project managers who have supervised construction of the Silver Line. But I don't have any reports on those activities, so let me share briefly with you what it means to be military-friendly. If there's one word that describes a common environment for the military and the civilian sector, it's ambiguity. Many military missions and management plans are broad outlines, goals, that take individuals using their initiative to fill in the blanks, the old 80-20 rule. And this is where veterans excel with their training and accomplishments. We are now in our 11th year of recognizing military-friendly employers, where we have become a prime source of transitioning service members and military spouses seeking civilian employment. Each year, organizations compete for the elite title of military-friendly via a data-driven survey of over 5,000 employers. But how did Metro arrive at this juncture? It starts by recognizing individuals who have excelled within Metro and wonder how they did it. The genesis of this movement to be military-friendly started 20 years ago when Jack Welch went to one of his sectors, headed up by then a gentleman named Bob Dornelli, who went on to become CEO of Home Depot. And Jack noticed an anomaly in the performance of their employees, and he asked Mr. Dornelli, what's the difference? And he mentioned one word, veterans. So Metro put organizational structure around that thought, and through your human resources department. But the key to all this is, and the linchpin, and why we recognize Metro as separating itself from others, is the fact that you recognize hiring veterans and having a veteran-eccentric recruiting manager, such as Mr. Blue, is very important. Transitioning out of the military is not easy for many, but recognizing the value of a veteran in your workplace by actively recruiting both service members and military spouses, making them a good percentage of your new hires, retaining them with policies that protect the reemployment rights of members of the National Guard and our Reserve Force deserves high merit. Therefore, it gives me great pleasure to recognize the Washington Area Metropolitan Transit Authority as a military-friendly employer. And Mr. Downs and Mr. Charles, if you'll join me, I have a plaque for that.
On behalf of the board, I want to thank Mr. Sarles and all of the staff who made that award possible. I know this is an annual process that work never stops, and we really do appreciate the efforts that have been made about making this a military-friendly organization. The issue that I wanted to mentioned briefly as part of the chair's report is that once again we're at the breach about the federal transit allowance program. The federal allowance for parking benefits is going up on the 1st of January, and if nothing changes, the transit allowance will be cut in half. It will be reduced from $245 a month to $130 a month. given the percent of our riders who are federal or local government employees who participate in the transit program, this potentially has a devastating effect on ridership as people decide to take other modes of transportation to get to work, particularly if the parking subsidy continues to go up while the transit subsidy continues to go down. It has the potential for adding to the congestion on our roads, increasing our operating cost at Metro, and I can't imagine that this is a rational policy of the federal government, but it is the potential outcome that we're facing, and the clock is again ticking down into the single digits in terms of the amount of time left to bring some corrective action to this issue. I think there are now less than 6 working days in the House. Yes. So the prospects of this happening increase significantly every day that goes by. And all I can say is that this will be a tragedy for the region if this actually happens. I'm encouraging everybody who can to speak out about this to members of our congressional delegation and anyone who can bring some rationality to this process. It's not a great prospect to look forward to. Ms. Hines?
Mr. Downs, you know, we've been here before, and one of what I think of as our secret weapons in this region is the fact that folks who live here, who take transit, actually work for folks from everywhere in the country. So they may work for a senator or a representative from Arkansas or California or Alaska. And so when we ask people to talk to the congressional delegation, we are not only talking about the Maryland, Virginia, and the folks from the district. We're saying, please talk to your employer. Please talk to the head of the committee that you work for, or the, you know, the special office up on the Hill, and point out to them the importance of a vibrant transit system here in our region. And I actually think the last time when we were able to sort of dial this back, that is, in fact, what happened. People talked to the folks they work for, not necessarily to the people from our few states. And I would also point out that it's not only about the D.C. region. It's a transit benefit that's national, that affects service delivery folks all across the country, and that the idea that somehow we support parking and we don't support riding is, as you said, kind of it's hard to fathom that the federal government really wants to be picking that mode choice. But Mr. Sorrells had a great piece in today's Express that lays out some of these issues as well. And I just think we need to get the message out, whatever our mechanisms are, that you should talk to every representative on Capitol Hill. If you have a connection, you should. And we have great evidence from the shutdown what the effect is on a day-to-day basis of people not riding this system. And the fact that then, you know, either we cut service or jurisdictions step in, or those who ride will have to pay more, none of which is particularly a great solution. So I really encourage people, if they hear this, to take it to heart and make those calls and send those emails.
Mr. Bolton. Let me just clarify. This is a congressional action that's necessary, not the federal government. You're absolutely correct. Having lobbied about 100 members of Congress over the last couple, 3 months, we need a tax vehicle to tack this on. And our champion is Senator Schumer from New York, who has told me, and they had a press conference 2 weeks, Veterans Day at Grand Central Station, New York, that he would try to attach the transit benefit parity with parking onto a legislative vehicle. What we're seeing, though, is that we've got the super committee in the way, that they're dealing with taxes. We've got tax reform that's on again, on off again in the way. And the question all becomes, will there be a tax extender package at the end of this congressional session of Congress? The House has virtually no appetite to help on this at all, but they never say in our meetings that the issue is incorrect or off base. They just look at you. So, but the House bill is sitting there waiting to move, and it has bipartisan support by Republicans and the Democrats. So say a prayer. You can pull this off.
Thanks. Mr. Charles?
On behalf of all of us at Metro, I thank Victory Media for this recognition as a military-friendly employer. Veterans are an important part of our workforce, and we've been working aggressively to increase opportunities here at Metro. Since 2012, we have increased the size of our military veteran employee base by nearly 50%. Veterans have been hired and trained as Metro Transit police officers, mechanics, bus and rail operators, human resource specialists, and information technology professionals, among other positions. We recognize that many of the certifications and skills that members of the military acquire during service are directly transferable to positions here at Metro. So Human Resources has taken the steps necessary to better match up our job descriptions with relevant military qualifications. As a result, a veteran applying today for a position as a Metro garage mechanic can use his or her military certification to qualify for the job. In addition to these job-specific skills, we recognize that vets possess the teamwork, discipline, and selfless service that we value here at Metro. So I thank you again for this recognition. This is a point of personal pride for me, and be assured that we will continue working to help military veterans build careers within the transit industry. Today we are seeking the board's approval for a number of Metro bus service adjustments. This is an annual effort to maintain a state of good operations and deliver quality service to Metro bus customers. This year, changes were proposed in 40 lines of Metro bus service, which included 49 route patterns extending throughout all jurisdictions. Extensive customer outreach was conducted, including 6 formal public hearings, 9 pop-up meetings at key transit centers, and 7 local community meetings. We also conducted an online survey and gathered more than 1,500 pieces of written testimony. Responding to the input of our customers, we amended several proposals before going to committee earlier this month. In response to customer requests, we decided to maintain the existing service between National Harbor and Branch Avenue, from D.C. to Dulles Airport, and along the Convention Center to Nationals Park route. We also adjusted changes on the 30s line to make improvements without bypassing downtown or changing customer travel patterns in Southeast. At the Customer Service Operations Committee meeting, 2 additional adjustments were made in response to board member requests. Taken together, the bus schedule adjustments before you today will improve reliability and travel time, reduce crowding for 1 in 6 Metro bus customers, and expand service on 6 high-volume corridors. If approved today, these service adjustments will be implemented in December and January. The last time the board approved bus service adjustments 1 year ago, we saw notable improvements for customers, and I expect the same positive results again this year. Now I'd like to share with the board a few improvements for Metro Rail riders. As I mentioned during my business plan rollout, we are making improvements that customers will notice along every step of their journey with Metro. Many of these are small changes, but taken together, they provide a better experience for our passengers. On the first one, we have made a change to passenger information displays, or PIDs, to make sure these signs are easy to read and display accurate arrival predictions. While these signs can also be used to post service notices, we've adjusted the software to ensure that when a train is approaching the station, passengers get what they want, arrival information on the display. We've also made software adjustments to help riders on the Blue Line. You may recall that we heard from Blue Line riders during Rush Plus service that a number of Yellow Line trains would arrive before their next Blue Line train making it difficult to know which offered the better trip time. Customer research told us riders would wait as long as 9 minutes for the next Blue Line train before making the decision to take the Yellow Line train. But the real frustration was that Blue Line riders had to just wait and see. The PIDs were showing the next three train arrivals like they were supposed to, but there were many times when the display was full of Yellow Line arrivals. So riders were left to wonder, where's the next Blue Line train? Now the PIDs at Blue Line stations between McPherson Square and Franconia Springfield show the next Blue Line arrival, even if it's not one of the next three trains. We hope that riders will consider using the Blue Line, Yellow Line service. For many riders, taking the Yellow Line and switching to at L'Enfant Plaza can provide a faster route to their destination. Two other improvements that rail customers will start noticing throughout the system are improved lighting in our underground stations and new resilient flooring in our rail cars. We are moving forward with a plan to install brighter mezzanine lighting in all underground stations. Lighting upgrades at five stations have been completed already. L'Enfant Plaza is under construction now, and the remaining 41 underground stations will have improved lighting by the end of 2015. This effort is the result of a partnership between Metro, the Accessibility Advisory Committee, and other community stakeholders, including the National Capital Citizens with Low Vision. And I thank the groups for their leadership. On our rail cars, we are moving forward with the installation of new resilient flooring in place of carpeting. The new flooring won't absorb dirt and spills, and it will be easier to clean. Be more durable and last longer. It will be slip resistant and provide a modern look and feel to our cars. We're nearing the end of our installation test program. We'll soon move forward with full-scale production. This work is being done in-house, utilizing our current resources. And over the next 2 years, we expect to install new flooring in all of our 6,000 and 5,000 series cars. Finally, I want to highlight the upcoming holiday schedule for reduced track work. Thanksgiving weekend is around the corner, and to accommodate riders traveling to celebrations throughout the region, most rail lines will be free of track work between Thursday, November 28th, and Monday, December 2nd. The only possible exception to this would be a short-term single-track operation on the Orange Line on Saturday of that weekend as we prepare for the arrival of the Silver Line. I hope everyone has a safe and enjoyable Thanksgiving, and I'll update the board on the rest of our holiday schedule in December. Mr. Chairman, this concludes my remarks.
Thank you. Next, we have the...
Yes.
Might I pose a question to the general manager at this time? We've had a number of presentations today and in previous meetings about the Tacoma Metro Development Project, and I just wanted to, through the general manager, make sure I understand all of the board's avenues. For example, the staff has presented us with a request to approve an amendment to the joint development agreement and the compact public hearing. And my question is there a way to move forward with a compact public hearing about the proposed changes without making the proposed without approving the amendment? If Mr. Sarles, if you can get the committee and through the chair certainly a opinion on that, I would appreciate it.
I will do that.
Thank you. Next we have a report by the customer service that,
yes,
Mr. Bolger.
In all seriousness, thank you, Rich, for the lighting update that I asked for. Is Farragut North a priority? I mean, it looks to me like it's almost done, but not quite done, because they still have the Home Depot lights hanging in the ceiling, and wondered when that's going to finally get done.
Yeah, Farragut North has been a priority for quite some time now, actually. In developing and finishing the ceilings, the project team has been indicated we've actually canceled track rights in other areas to be able to do that work. So yes, it is a priority, specifically the date when the lighting will get done. I'm not entirely sure right now, but we can certainly get back to you on that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thank you, Mr. Downing.
Sorry for asking questions about lighting. Let me ask one. The construction walls that we put up in the stations, Particularly, I noticed it at Montfont this week, which I think is actually protecting where the lighting is going in, is an absolute light-absorbing material. You put up a dark blue wall, and it just makes the place even darker than it ever was before. I would just suggest we look at what the spec is for putting up that construction material.
We will. We had moved from brown walls to blue walls, but maybe they're too dark, so we'll take care of that.
Any other questions or comments? Hearing none, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I have the report of the Customer Service and Operations Committee of November 7th. The committee received this as an action item and as a follow-up on the public hearings that were made for our bus adjustments. These adjustments are within the 2014 budget, and they are to provide increase in ridership and improvement in performance, on-time performance for our customers. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to put a motion on the table. I recommend that the approval of the staff report from the public hearing docket B1302, including approval to amend the tariff and modify Metro bus service to improve effectiveness, performance, and customer satisfaction, and approval of the Title VI equity analysis as detailed in the resolution. Resolution has been was amended to remove any change in service to the Bowie-Crofton line in Maryland and Route 774 in the District of Columbia. Those routes will remain unchanged. Mr. Chairman, that is the motion on the table.
Motion made and seconded. Did we have discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, we, of course, heard testimony this morning about some remaining concerns on the 30s route. And I wanted to get some clarification, if I could, to make sure that I understand this to be DDOT's, the District Department of Transportation's recommendation to proceed today. If Mr. Bellamy could weigh in.
At this time, I'm lost because of Steve, but it's not my understanding that it was the action by DDOT.
Oh, okay. I understood that all of the bus service changes were either recommended or agreed upon by the district. So without having clarification today, and I want to thank the staff for all of their help, because they've certainly worked with us on making sure that the bus service changes are indeed enhancing service and addressing neighborhood concerns. But I continue to be concerned about the address raised by the Hillcrest community, and I'm going to move to strike the first item related to the 30s buses in attachment A for consideration today, in hopes that we can get some clarification and bring it back to the board at a later date.
That's a motion, Ms. Bowser, that we want to strike the 30s.
Yes, and it's the first item.
Yes, it's the one that was contemplated in all of us. Is that the correct one? Is it that's presenting?
Yes.
Okay. And is there a second to that motion? To the chain? We have a second. I'm going to die without seconds.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All righty. And the motion that's made on the table, Mr. Chair?
Hearing no further discussion, motion being made and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye for approval of the recommendation on the bus service changes from the Customer Service Committee.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed?
Bowser.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, that is the report from the Customer Service and Operation.
Reports by jurisdiction. Bowser, I don't have a comment from the district. If you would care to make
it. No report.
Okay. WSTC, Mr. Nichols.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a brief comment that last week, in the past 10 days, our general manager and the Secretary of Transportation in Maryland, Jim Smith, met, and I was not at the meeting, but I certainly have talked briefly with Rich, I've talked with our staff members from MDOT and staff members from WMATA, and understand it was excellent meeting in terms of just really engaging on the key issues that are in front of us now, momentum around the NTSB issues that we have continued at the system here to make good progress on. So thank you, Rich, for that discussion. I understand it was an excellent discussion. The only other observation, if I might make, was just really a personal observation, and that to note for this body, the passing this week of John Tidings and John, who was the former president of the Greater Washington Board of Trade, there for more than 30 years, most of it as the president of the Greater Washington Board of Trade. And while he's been retired for a few years, John was clearly truly a giant of our region. And he was, nothing took place in Washington where people didn't say, wait, have we talked to John? And that wasn't because he was the president of the Board of Trade. It was because of the character that he was and he embodied. And he was a personal friend, wonderful gentleman, was a founding, one of the founders of Greater Washington, Leadership Greater Washington, which really, really defined his perspectives on this region and what it means to live in the Greater Washington region and the responsibility and the opportunity that it brings. So just wanted to note for this body, the importance of his life in Washington, D.C., and the impact that he had on our region and our system. Thank you.
NBTC, Ms. Pedrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I don't have a report from NBTC, but I think I will continue in the vein with Mr. Nichols. We also lost Ron Kirby, the Metropolitan Council of Governments Transportation. I've had lots of years sitting on the Transportation Planning Board and watching Mr. Kirby's work, and Mr. Kirby has made such an enormous contribution to this region. We had him contributing in our role that we're playing here, and he was a champion of WMATA, but most importantly, a champion of transportation and helping us build communities in this metropolitan region. His skill and knowledge of transportation was respected, and I think his decorum was one that was duly respected when you consider that he tried to bring together a large number of transportation professionals and elected officials, and in a manner in which to accomplish something that was great for this region. So Ron's passing was tragic, and it is tragic that we think of him following such an unfortunate act, because Ron was a very gentle person relative to what happened to him. And so I think we have our work to do to continue in the vein that Ron worked to continue making this region a strong region for the work of transportation and the work that we are doing here at the WMATA board that we have championed.
Yeah, I just wanted to second what my colleague said, and also to say one factor for board members. When I co-chaired the COG Board of Trade Task Force on Governance, Ron was the primary staff person on that report and basically was a major contributor to the recommendations we made. And so his loss is especially noted with respect to the impact on what we're doing.
Mr. Downey,
federal government.
No report, but I also would want to associate myself with the remarks regarding Mr. Biden and Ron Kirby. Ron was here in this room a few months ago working together with us on the future of transit and the place that Metro plays in that, and we certainly will miss him, but want to carry that work forward in memory.
I was struck by the comment that was made at Ron's funeral by several folks that, first and foremost, Ron was a gentleman in both senses of the term, and the fact that he will be greatly missed, not just for his constant focus on mobility for the region, but for a style of governance and management that was inclusive and respectful and shines in a sea of politics and public life that is anything but. He'll be sadly missed. With that, I would conclude the meeting if there are no further items before the board. Hearing none, we're adjourned.